Cascadia and the edge of the world, Euphemet presents Night Drift with Jim Perry.
Good evening, I'm Jim Perry, and you're listening to Night Drift, presented by Euphemet. Broadcasting tonight from my home studio in the hinterlands of the Oregon coast, directly to the mothership, Alternative Talk, 1150 AM, KKNW in Seattle. Of course, we're also streaming worldwide at nightdrift.com. And tonight, a conversation with a returning guest, veteran journalist Ralph Blumenthal. We'll talk about his work on the UFO Experiencer beat. He's the co-writer of the groundbreaking New York Times story on the Pentagon's secret UAP program and the book, The Believer, Alien Encounters, Hard Science, and the Passion of John Mack. I'll ask him about his career as a staff reporter for the New York Times, some big questions around his personal experience in all of this, and much, much more. That's tonight. This Thursday, we have a brand new episode of Euphemet dropping on the feed, one of the most surreal, time-bending stories we've ever featured. That's Thursday on the Euphemet feed, wherever you listen to podcasts. No calls tonight, but if you can't join the conversation live, you can join us right here on Twitter by using hashtag Nightdrift. I'm Jim Perry. Ralph Blumenthal on Nightdrift, right after this.
Listening to Night Drift with Jim Perry on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM, KKNW, Seattle. Now, here again is Jim.
I'm Jim Perry. Welcome back to Night Drift. A big thank you to our sponsors, AMC Networks, Shudder, BetterHelp, and our patrons over at patreon.com/euphemet. Thank you for making this show possible, and, you know, thank you for listening. I'm talking to you right now. Thank you for listening. You know, over the past few weeks, we have been featuring stories, ideas, and experiences from the direct edge of the unknown. Contact, abduction, many of these compiled in data sets that reveal a widespread phenomenon. A fraction of those, people interacting with some sort of intelligence. Someone who has worked extensively in exposing these stories for a new generation of mainstream readers is with me tonight. For more than 45 years, Ralph Blumenthal led an extensive and illustrious career at the New York Times as an arts and culture news reporter, an investigative and crime reporter, a foreign correspondent, and more. He also co-wrote the breakthrough 2017 Times article that broke the story of the secret UAP Pentagon program. He has written 7 books on organized crime and cultural history. He led the Times Metro team that won the Pulitzer Prize for breaking news coverage of the 1993 truck bombing of the World Trade Center. His latest, The Believer, Alien Encounters, Hard Science, and the Passion of John Mack, is out now in paperback. And welcome back to Night Drift, Ralph.
Jim, thank you. Great to be with you.
Yeah, you know, in our program back on October 11th of last year, we discussed extensively your book, The Believer, in which is all about the life and work of Pulitzer Prize-winning Harvard psychiatrist John Mack. Folks can go back and listen to that episode on the Euphemet podcast feed as perhaps a nice part one to this very conversation. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious, Ralph, since the book's release, have you learned anything new about Mack or been surprised by any new discoveries on the topic of the experiencer?
I wouldn't say I learned anything new because I spent, you know, almost 17 years looking into his story.
Right.
But I am amazed anew at how much of a path, groundbreaking pathmaker he was. Mm. because the issues that he investigated at Harvard, sometimes to his professional detriment, are still issues we're grappling with today, maybe more urgently than ever, and there's still no answer. Yeah. So his research goes back to the 90s, so almost, 30 years. And yet we don't know much more than he had at his disposal, what he learned. And he certainly pushed the boundaries.
Right.
So it's not so much that I've learned anything new, but I'm constantly amazed again at what he was able to accomplish.
Yeah. And probably diving into it for as many years as you have, you've been able to kind of grasp the full sort of juggernaut of this topic, correct? And does it almost feel more enormous than when you began?
Well, it is enormous, that's for sure. and, we've made, since I began my research, we've made enormous progress in the whole issue of UFOs, UAP. As you know, last year, less than a year ago, 2021, the UAP Task Force issued its long-awaited report. It was only 9 pages long, but it certainly was revolutionary. And those who are disappointed that it didn't say more, I think, are missing the boat. What it said was extraordinary. For the first time, the government was saying that these objects are real. And we don't know, what they are, where they come from, who's behind the wheel, if any intelligence, why they're here. But they're not figments of the imagination. They're not fly specks on the windshield. They're not all the things that, the government dismissed them as years ago. So that is an enormous leap forward. And yet, of course, it is still far short of intelligence and the whole idea of aliens, which the government does not address because there's no answer, unlike with UFOs, UAP, where there is scientific backup now for the first time in the form of Navy, measuring devices. So we've come a long way. We still have a long way to go, but I would say that's been the big breakthrough.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll touch on this a little later, but I think you, whether you take credit for it or not, you were a part of making that happen, my friend. We'll get into that a little bit later in my personal opinion on that. But, I was wondering, I've read a lot of your work. I have a New York Times subscription, and so I've been going through the back catalog, and I've read a lot of your pieces that are available out there publicly to this day. And boy, what a career you have had, my friend. And I'm hoping that this conversation we have, we get a chance to break into a little bit more of the full spectrum of your life and career. And a part of that is your own personal experiences outside of being a journalist. And did I hear somewhere that you potentially had a sort of anomalous experience yourself when you were younger?
Not when I was younger. When I was younger, I was very interested in science fiction. And I grew up at a time when science fiction was very, very popular, Ray Bradbury, Isaac Asimov, and that sort of attuned me to the idea that, there were great stories out there, but it was all fiction. I did have, I never saw a UFO and neither did John Mack. I have not had any abduction experiences, neither did John Mack. And later on, he thought, and I guess I join him here, that it was to the good for him because he was always reporting on it as an outsider, not as an advocate. And I kind of feel the same way. I'm not invested in this issue to the point of, like so many people I've interviewed who've had personal experiences. And I in a way, I envy them because the experiences are extraordinary, literally out of this world kinds of things. But it just hasn't happened to me. And by the way, Jim, one of the interesting areas of research, which is too often neglected, is why some people have these experiences and other people don't. I mean, is a mystery that really is worth exploring. But, to get back to me, I haven't had any anomalous experiences except for one thing that I wrote about not too long ago when I was doing a piece on Robert Bigelow, who was one of Mac's benefactors. and is a great science entrepreneur, and developed a space habitat, which is now being used on the International Space Station. And as you know, I mean, he was very interested in, he bought Skinwalker Ranch, which was a locus in Utah of many anomalous events, very mysterious. And Robert Bigelow last year announced a contest for the best essay on survival of consciousness, life after death. And I wrote that up for the New York Times. It was a big story. And he was trying to get to the bottom of, you know, what these experiences are. People who have, quote, died and come back and remembered things, you know. So I was grappling with all this, writing the story, and how do I tell the story of the New York Times? And I was lying in bed about 6 o'clock in the morning, and suddenly there was a tremendous explosion. And I leaped out of bed, and the dog and my wife, we were all awakened. And the terrace door had basically shattered, blown apart. We lived, you know, 12 stories up over the street in Midtown Manhattan.
Oh, my God.
So it wasn't a rock, you know, and it wasn't a bird, because there was no dead bird. Something made that terrace door explode. Now, was it a temperature inversion, like some people suggested? I don't know. But the door definitely exploded as I was lying there thinking about life after death. So I don't know. You want to count that as an anomalous experience?
Perhaps, you know, who's to say, I guess, right?
I didn't ascribe it to anything, you know, necessarily momentous, but it was just one of those strange things that happened, and there's no explanation.
Yeah. Well, you know, it does seem that, you know, hearkening back to Mac, he had no fear in this work of investigating the UFO. And of course, our other conversation, we discussed that, you know, he was a very passionate man. And it didn't take him long until he was, you know, lecturing about this topic. Right. A very passionate individual. And so, you know, he wasn't afraid of what that was going to do to his work or his career, it seems like. Have you yourself found any sort of pushback professionally once you started covering these sorts of topics?
Good question. Not to the extent, well, Mac was a distinguished professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. He had a lot to risk by going into this field. I'm a journalist and a writer, so I can investigate almost anything without risking my career. So I wouldn't compare myself to him in terms of the risk he undertook. And it did, I mean, he paid quite a price because he was investigated by Harvard, as a story I tell in the book, and he got through it all right, but it cost him a lot of money and lawyer's fees and psychic trauma and all the other things. But you know, people make jokes all the time. It's still a subject of some ridicule, unfortunately, which is what has held it back from real scientific exploration. My colleague Helene Cooper, because the first piece I wrote, co-wrote in December 2017, which revealed the existence of this Pentagon Office to Investigate UFOs. We called it ATIP. It went under different names at different times. Helene Cooper, who worked in the Washington Bureau, who covers the Pentagon, and who joined us in this series in breaking the story, she endured some ribbing, you know, ridicule by her colleagues. And then the story she told us was that she put up on her computer one of the three videos we got from the Navy showing these objects, you know, actually being tracked by Navy measuring devices, gun cameras and stuff. And that really put an end to the joking in the Washington Bureau. People would gather around her computer, and they were amazed that these images, because these were really the first authenticated images, military images made public of these objects. So that's what changed the, you know, the paradigm. So that shut them up.
Well, it's a good point, and it dovetails nicely into one of the non-hyperbolic statements that I was going to make in regards to your work, and that I think it's really changed. It's changed the perspective and the lens that a lot of normal, run-of-the-mill, everyday people view this phenomenon through. You know, that series of articles that started in 2017 for the Times, you know, many people are now ready to talk about their experiences around the dinner table, around the water cooler, since that story has been published. Looking back at that moment in 2017, I don't know, since this has been such a whirlwind, maybe you haven't even had a second to breathe and think about it in this way, but what were your personal feelings? What are your personal feelings now, looking back at that moment after seeing what an effect that story's had?
Well, it has been amazing. And, you know, I didn't think of it at the time, you know, what the consequences would be. But the story, you know, like so many stories in my career, developed quite unexpectedly. I wasn't out looking for a UFO story, to be sure, in December 17. But Leslie Kane, someone I got to know as I was writing my book, because she was the partner of Bud Hopkins, one of the pioneers in this field who really got John Mack interested first. So Leslie and I had become friendly. She wrote a groundbreaking book on UFOs back in 2011. Sure. We're interviewing pilots and heads of government in Europe or so who were more open about UFOs than we were in this country. And she told me she was going down to Washington to meet with some people who were involved in UFO investigations. When she came back, she told me she had met with a guy, Lou Elizondo, whose name was not a household word then. He is now a household name, but he was the head of this ATIP office in the Pentagon that was actually investigating UFOs and had gotten money through Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, to do this investigation. It was all secret. It wasn't top secret. It was not confidential. So she had been down at a meeting with Lou Elizondo and some others, and Lou Elizondo was resigning. So that's interesting right there. So she came back from Washington with that story and said, let's see if we can get this into the New York Times. And I had actually retired from the Times in 2009. So this was 2017, but I still kept up the Times. I knew a lot of the editors there. I broached the topic. I went to the top guy, Dean Baquet, who was the executive editor, and I didn't give him any real details. I just said, we have a sensational story that really belongs in the New York Times. And he put us in touch with the Washington Bureau investigations editor, and he came up to New York and we laid out the story. And that's what started it off. So, yeah, I was surprised the story took off. You know, ran on the front page on a Sunday. You can't get better display than that. It ran with two of the three videos we ended up getting from the Pentagon showing these objects and the Navy jets, you know, tracking them. We had a sidebar on one of the pilots who was describing his own experiences, Dave Fravor, who's amazing. And boy, and that really took it. It was really one of the most viewed stories on the Times webpage. And the videos were, you know, the most viewed videos almost at the Times that ever run. So, yeah, I was kind of surprised. I wasn't expecting it, but that's what happens in the news business.
One would hope, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It doesn't happen often enough, but when it happens, it's right. Amazing. I mean, it's also a question of the right, you know, there's a kind of a Zen thing about catching a story at the right time. It was just the right time for this story. There'd been so many stories about UFOs that didn't really get proper display, and there was so much skepticism and ridicule. And you know, the fact that the Times was paying attention to this on the front page, that, by the way, what helped us was that we had the story completely on the record. There were no anonymous sources. There was no, you know, unacknowledged information. Everything was right. Laid out. on the record. And so that helped. I mean, people could check our reporting and there were no, you know, nothing was, there were no complaints about things we missed or misquoted. I mean, it was all acknowledged afterwards as completely accurate. So it all came together.
Yeah, for once an airtight story. On the structure of what's happening, which is so rare.
That certainly helped.
All right, we have to take a short break here on Night Drift. I'm Jim Perry. We'll be right back here with more Ralph Blumenthal after this.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Listening to Night Drift with Jim Perry on Alternative Talk 1150 AM KKNW Seattle. Now, here again is Jim.
We are back here on Night Drift. Remember, you can follow us across social media at Euphemet. If you want more of the program, you can find it on the Euphemet feed, wherever you listen to podcasts. For more information, visit euphemet.com. And listen, do you have a paranormal experience that has changed your life? Made you think about something differently? Share it with me at jim@euphemet.com. The features we now do for Euphemet are almost 100% listeners who are many times sharing their stories for the very first time. So if you'd like to, jim@euphemet.com. And I'm back here with journalist Ralph Blumenthal. His latest book, The Believer, Alien Encounters, Hard Science, and the Passion of John Mack, which when I picked up, I could not put down. I've almost read it twice already. is out now in paperback. And we're diving into the work and life of a man who, for my money, has helped define what I'd like to call the postmodern UFO era. Welcome back to Night Drift, Ralph.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be with you, Jim.
You know, before break, we were getting around to this topic, but it brought up a question in my mind, which is, you know, for years, stories about UFOs, abductions, life after death, you know, when turned into editors, they would routinely meet the dead spike. You know what I mean? What do you think has changed in more recent years to allow these stories to make print, Ralph?
Well, that's a good question. First of all, there's been a lot of good research. Survival of consciousness, for example. Mm. There's been, increasing scientific research on these so-called near-death experiences, which remain, you know, in their way as mysterious as anything else. Really, Leslie Kane, my collaborator on the Time Story stories, recently had a 6-part Netflix series based on her book called Surviving Death.
Oh, great series.
Yeah, amazing. Followed the stories. The first episode, which was really my favorite, followed the story of two physicians, one who was trapped underwater when her whitewater rafting expedition, came undone, and she was held underwater and rescued later and pronounced clinically dead and flatlined. And but she remembered everything that happened in the emergency room. She remembered which doctor was standing where, and the conversations that she heard. Her body floated up, as she described it, and she witnessed, herself lying on the bed. As they frantically try to revive her. So stories like that over the years have, have gotten circulated, and science has taken note of them with, again, no real understanding of or an explanation. Again, I want to make the distinction between a UFO disclosures, which have really progressed and now are regarded seriously by the government, by the Pentagon, by the Navy. Navy's a little ahead of the Air Force, but the Air Force too, that these objects exist. So that still doesn't take us to aliens, but it does make respectable the idea that we need to know what these objects are, where they're coming from, their amazing aerodynamic properties, which we would like to duplicate and reverse engineer for our own security before anybody else gets a hold of this technology.
Right.
And one of the things that the UAP report last June showed was that these things are not believably Russian or Chinese or any other earthly powers technology. It's not like someone has, beaten us to the punch and gotten a hold of this technology. There is nothing earthly likely about any of these objects. They can do things that just cannot be duplicated on Earth. So that's been a big breakthrough. Again, it doesn't take us to aliens, and none of the Time stories discussed aliens, because we don't have the backup for that yet. We just don't know enough, but we now know a lot more about the UFOs.
Yeah. Well, if recent news coverage holds any weight at all, it appears that one of those countries listed can't even operate a tank correctly, let alone a UFO of some sort. So, speaking of tanks and all sorts of adventure, during your career, Ralph, you've had some amazing beats, man. And your work, you've done like a Pulitzer Prize winning work, was some of which, really kind of explores some darkness, the dark side of it all, organized crime, terrorism. And you were even a young reporter narrowly sort of escaping death in places like Vietnam and Cambodia while at war. You've covered Nazi hunters, stolen statues. Really, we could go on and on and on about the awesome stories that you've been on, the adventures that you've been on out there in the field. But can you take me back to a time during your reporting or while working on a story, sometime in your career, that you felt like you were just completely over your head?
Well, that's often the case with any reporting, you know, because I sometimes teach journalism. I'm now at working at Baruch College, at the City University of New York, and I was teaching journalism for a while to young students. And a journalist starts off every day, really, from point zero, you know, not knowing anything about a subject that he or she is going to be writing about. So that's what makes journalism, by the way, such a great profession, as you know, because you're always learning something new, and it's you're always teaching yourself before you can, you know, educate the public. So you're very often thrown into stories that you know nothing about to begin with. And that's what's so exciting. So I often felt the way you just described. I'm way over my head and I don't know anything. I was recently compiling some anecdotes from my career, and I remember the story when I was a young foreign correspondent in West Germany. And I was in the office alone one day, and I got a call from a government spokesman that West Germany was revaluing the mark. The Deutsche Mark was pegged to the dollar, and for reasons to stimulate the economy, the mark was cut free from the dollar, and it was allowed to float. Now, I didn't understand any of this. I was not a great economics student. And here I am, the New York Times correspondent, and I'm supposed to not only understand it, but explain it to all our sophisticated readers. And I felt completely inadequate and overwhelmed. And I did what journalists do all the time, is I called an expert. I reached out to somebody at the university. I got some professor to explain it to me. And once he explained it to me so simply that I could understand it, I was able to explain it to readers. And I wrote the story, led the paper. It was a three-column headline on the Times the next day. And I laugh when I think of all these people all over the world reading this story and saying, oh, boy, this guy, he really understands this stuff. I learned it about 5 minutes before. So that is typical. But that's what makes journalism such a great, you know, profession, and so exciting and challenging, that you learn things all the time. You got to be a quick study. And that's a skill that is applicable to students everywhere, not only journalists. But how do you bring yourself up to speed on a complicated subject instantly?
Yeah. You know, you've seen a lot during your time, Ralph. You know, when you look at the sort of the structure of independent media producers or content creators, there's a lot of folks out there that are exploring this very topic in earnest, right? Is there any advice you can give to those coming up in this field, you know, doing their best to cover this strange material, perhaps without any real training in journalism?
Well, you know, the best training for journalism is to be as widely read as you possibly can be. And it's not necessarily to study journalism, the field of journalism, because learning to write a news story, to me, is pretty simple, pretty basic. The hard thing is to be curious about everything and to gather, to increase your basic knowledge of the world and every other subject, so that you're comfortable seeking out information in all these different fields, whether it's science or physics, astronomy, health, you name it, foreign affairs, politics. So that's the trick, is to be widely read and curious and learn how to master technology. Now, the young generation today is very good at that. Compiling information quickly. You know how to use computers. You know how to use the internet. We were really hampered when I started in journalism. Every time we needed to find out something, we had to run to the library and spend hours and hours poring over books. And now there's all these shortcuts. So it is amazing that revolution that has made all this information available. So that's a big help to people. But that's my advice, is really to be as well educated as you can possibly be in every possible discipline. And don't worry about learning, quote, journalism, because that is comparatively easy.
That is such great advice for some folks out there, I think. Yeah, so thank you so much for sharing that. And I did read a story about you commenting on sort of how journalism has changed, how your work has changed, and you made some allusions to some very difficult typewriters that you used to have to manhandle for any results.
Yeah.
Do you remember this?
You know, when we dealt with equipment in the old days, it was very bad. We had one telephone on the desk, and if someone was trying to reach you, they couldn't get through because you were on the line. you know, there was no call waiting, and, you know, we didn't have a battery of phones. So, but no one else had anything better. So it's not like, you know, we were handicapped. That was the state of technology of the world. But today, I mean, it's unthinkable for us when we were growing up, the technology at the disposal today of people. I mean, every book practically ever written can be looked up in a matter of seconds on your cell phone. So that's an extraordinary technological breakthrough and leap. So the tools that the journalists today have are so extraordinary. All knowledge is suddenly accessible. And with that, of course, comes fake news too, which is another problem. Yeah. And I teach a course on this sometimes at Baruch. How do students, you know, verify the news that's out there? Because it's like drinking from a fire hose. I mean, there's so much information pouring out. How do you know what's real? Mm-hmm. And right now we see how Russia is falsifying the news about their invasion of Ukraine, and their own people are not getting the facts. So how do you get the right information out? That's a huge challenge.
Yeah, you wouldn't know if it was fake news if it sprayed you in the face at very high pressure.
Yeah. That's very sad. And because we're inundated with all this news from every different direction coming on us, you know, on laptops, our cell phones, Twitter, how do you know that it's accurate? So that's a real challenge. And we didn't have that problem because we had very relatively few sources of information. We had the mainstream media. And what I say is we had pretty reliable gatekeepers, right. You know, sort of marshaling the news. Now the gatekeeper, there's no gates.
Yeah. Off with the gates for sure. You know, last week we had Cheryl Costa on. We discussed, of course, her and Linda's stunning UFO sightings desk reference book.
Yeah, I wrote a story about them.
Yeah.
And they're doing remarkable work in compiling the data, where UFO sightings have been made and what time of day and what kind of object, and very good science, because that's what's really going to rescue this field from disreputability is the fact that science has to be applied to it. It's not anti-science. It's begging to be scientifically investigated.
Yeah.
So the so-called skeptics, you know, who are not, in my view, not really skeptics at all, because a skeptic has a healthy regard for the truth. Some of these people are just debunkers who want to make fun of the whole field. But those who are really interested in getting to the truth really value the science, and I value the science, and more money has to be put into it, not less.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's very strange. You know, it's a topic that can almost feel dangerous writing and speaking about still, but science seems to be that thing that is lifting the veil a little bit for just normal people to accept it, and also for people to become more curious without a lot of shame, right?
Yeah, and shame is the problem in this field, especially when you get to the experiencers, the so-called abductees, who've had these experiences. And this is what really floored John Mack when he heard about them and interviewed these people on his own. I mean, he was a distinguished psychiatrist, so this was his field. And when he heard these stories from people, he could not believe that they were true. And yet the people were acting out the experiences on his couches in ways that convinced him that they'd really experienced something. And then there was, you know, fragmentary evidence backing up their stories, the unexplained scars and third party accounts. And evidence of a UFO in the neighborhood, you know, broken tree branches and things like that. So all these things made him think that there was something to this. These stories are so amazing. And I've talked to a lot of experiencers myself for my research, and some of them were sources for John Mack, and some of them came out since John Mack's death. It's a complete mystery. It's still a complete mystery. We don't understand it at all. And that's what needs to be pursued.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for everything you have done, along with some of your contributors, to helping push the boundaries on what's acceptable within the mainstream. It I think has really definitively changed a whole field of study that is not unlike what we've seen in other times with some things like rocket research or astrology. It's a really big deal, and so it's one of the reasons I appreciate you so much spending some time with us here. We've been talking with journalist Ralph Blumenthal. His latest book, Believer, Alien Encounters, Hard Science, and the Passion of John Mack, is now out in paperback. So I really encourage everyone to go and pick that up. And I'll have a link, of course, if you're listening to this as the podcast, I'll have a link in the show notes where you can just click right through and grab that as soon, like right now, just as you're listening. You can do two things at once. Just grab it. Sorry if that was just hard shilling, but I can't help it. Ralph, where can everyone find your work?
Oh, thank you, Jim. I have a website, ralphblumenthal.com. Has some of my bio, my previous books, links to The Believer. It's now, I'm happy to say, it's not only in hardcover and paperback, but it's an audio book.
Oh, great.
It's on Kindle. So you can't escape it, Jim. It's everywhere.
Full spectrum.
Have it. Amazon has it. It's online. So I'm very proud of it. It's gotten some nice attention, thanks to folks like you who, you know, give me a chance to talk about it. And I think the time is right to look at this field. I mean, there's so much we don't know about it. But John Mack is a hero to me in that he risked his career, you know, to look into this field. He could have walked away and said, you know, I don't want to get involved. It's not good for my career. But he did risk his career. And he contributed a lot of good information, at least. He showed us the outlines of this strange phenomenon. He didn't solve the mystery, but we know more about it thanks to him.
So brilliant. And thanks to you, we are learning these stories once again and the research we're seeing. So we appreciate that so much, Ralph. Thanks for visiting us here at Night Drift again, and we hope to talk to you soon, my friend.
I look forward to it, Jim. Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Night Drift with Jim Perry on Alternative Talk KKNW 1150 AM Seattle. You can hear the show anytime on its podcast feed, wherever you listen to them. Go to euphemet.com for more and join us next Sunday. And until then, keep looking up.
follow Night Drift with Jim Perry on Spotify and subscribe on Apple Podcasts to receive new episodes of Night Drift automatically and gain access to all of our past episodes.